Welcome back to our show. We're here with our guests, Stephen Cocroft and Estelle Cocroft. And we were talking about what keeps you up at night when you're sailing offshore. Estelle, tell us about that.
Nothing really keeps me awake. When I sleep, I sleep. The only thing that will wake me up is Stephen.
How does that happen?
Sometimes I go to make her do a watch.
Oh, boy. And speaking of that, what type of watch schedule do you normally use while offshore?
Well, if we're making a long passage, what I do, and this may sound a little bit bizarre, but I have an egg timer with a lanyard that you can hang around your neck. When we sailed from Cape Town to the U.S., it was a 7,000-mile voyage, and we would see for 41 days, so we had to have a fixed schedule. During the day, I don't really bother with the schedule because there's always someone on deck, but at night, from 6 to 6 or 6 to 8, we generally have, I don't like to put people on for longer than 2 hours at a time. And what I do is I give them an egg timer, and they have to, every 12 minutes, go and walk around, or not walk around, but go and spend 3 minutes looking around for lights. And then I don't care, they can play on their computer, they can even sleep. As long as they wake up every 12 minutes and do a look around, if there's anything, obviously let me know. Got to the stage where if the egg timer didn't go off, I would wake up because I thought my people on watch were sleeping.
Yeah, watches are just not that much fun. And I started seeing all kinds of anchor lights, even in the middle of the ocean.
Wait, what were you having to drink?
I think she was seeing Uranus.
Yeah, you know, I see these boats anchored out in the middle of the ocean, and I would wake Stephen up and say, come, there's a boat right in front of us.
She called the Evening Star on VHF once.
Yeah, so these things happen.
Well, so, okay, you have to be on watch for 2 hours, and then, but how much do you get off, and can you sleep?
Well, generally what we have is we have, you know, probably 3 to 4 crews. So if let's just say you have 3 crew, you're 2 hours on, you're 4 hours off. And you'll find that you become conditioned. So when you go off, you'll go straight to sleep generally even wake up after 4 hours.
Okay. Now, also, I understand some yachts have a radar that has an alarm that goes off when somebody comes into range, right? And you can set that range. Can you talk about that? Did you ever have that on your boat?
Yeah, that's correct. It's called a guard. You can set it at a distance that you want. Generally, you can set it at 1 mile, 2 miles, 3 miles, 4 miles. And anything that goes through that protective band, you can either have it just the forward looking or you can have it all round. And when something breaks that guard, when a return signal comes in that guard, then an alarm goes off. But not a very good idea to rely on a radar. People are much, much more reliable.
Yeah, but isn't it really good to have when you're out at night in fog or rain, something like that?
Yeah, you know, when you're in the open ocean, really, you know, the radar, I would only switch it on if I see something because you're obviously trying to conserve power. But radar's probably the single most important piece of equipment, in my opinion, because when you can't see, you really need to have one.
Okay. Tell me, what do you think is a common cruising myth?
I would say that you have to completely stock your boat with food from your own country. Remember, everybody in the world eats. When I first left from South Africa, I packed my boat so full of eggs, fresh eggs, that is. By the time we got to the next destination, half of it was rotten. But I was absolutely determined that I had to have 2 eggs per day for every crew member. Can you imagine how many eggs I had to stow?
Wow.
It was crazy. But I learned very quickly that everybody eats in the world and, you know, you make do.
Steven. Yeah, you don't have to carry tons of food. We dropped the waterline a couple of inches because we wow. thought that the only place that had food was South Africa. And then we quickly discovered that you know, you can buy food everywhere. So, you know, your basic provisions, rice, flour, et cetera, and emergency rations of Spam and beans in tins and that sort of thing, always good to carry. But just, you know, always rely that you, when you get to the next place, there will be food to get.
Yeah, and the other thing I would say is that people think that you sail all the time. I would say you're probably at anchor 90% of the time. So, yeah, it's you're not out in the elements sailing and standing watches and, you know, biting your nails. You're at anchor probably 90% of the time, and it's really good.
Yeah. You know, sailing is probably the worst part of cruising because you have to do it to get to the next destination. But, you know, you don't do a lot of it by comparison. Percentage-wise, it's probably 5% in reality.
Well, that's another reason why when I'm looking at a boat, I think the biggest factor should be how comfortable is it when you're stopped at the dock or at anchor, and not necessarily, oh, let's go get this other boat because it's one knot faster. I just don't think that makes that much of a difference.
Yeah, it's the being there. You know, the getting there is fun, but the being there is the big deal.
Okay. What is your biggest lesson learned?
Well, the biggest lesson learned for me was that you have to be, it's the seven P's, you know, proper planning and preparation prevents a bad performance. I had to edit that a little bit. But preparation is everything. That I learned. You know, if you think you should have done something, then it should be done. And if something does go wrong, don't leave it, fix it. Because normally when you have a major disaster, it's a collection of things that go wrong, not just one big thing.
And Stelly, what was the big lesson? Just don't buy a lot of eggs?
Yeah, right. I would agree with Stephen. You know, be prepared. You could never be too prepared. And definitely, that thing that is broken, lying broken in the corner that you meant to fix or meant to redo, that's the thing that's going to come back at you. So fix everything.
Okay. Sounds like good advice. What's the key to making the cruising life enjoyable?
I think the key is that you got to keep moving. The exciting thing for us about cruising was that we were never backtracking. We were always going to a new place with new adventures. So for me, definitely it is keep going, don't backtrack.
For me, it was all about connecting with the locals. Go in there, get to know them, get to know their language, see what they eat, why they do things. Definitely, that is, I would say, is the most exciting thing for me about cruising.
And she used to take me and look at piles of rubble. She called them ruins and history, but they were just these piles of rubble that she used to drag me to in Egypt and all over Europe.
Okay. Tell me, what are some of your favorite pieces of gear on the boat and why?
Well, my two favorite pieces of gear are the autopilot and my dinghy. Our dinghy's name is Trigger, like the horse, and that's essentially our car that gets us from the boat to shore, and that's a very important piece of gear, and I protect that at all costs. And then, of course, is Ray, our Raymarine autopilot, which is also absolutely critical because I don't like to helm. I'm normally helming a bit when I'm 2 foot off the dock with the autopilot.
Okay, well, we have to take a short break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to Yachts, the perfect escape vehicle, and this is Gary Fretz. Welcome back. This is Gary Fretz, and you're listening to Yachts, the perfect escape vehicle. We're here today with Stephen Cocroft and Estelle Cocroft, and we have some new guests, some cruisers, Don and Linda. Stephen, how did you meet them?
Don and Linda were sailing school students on our monohull in the Caribbean 16 years ago. And we've been firm friends ever since. And Don and Linda liked the lifestyle, so they bought themselves a catamaran. And they've come all the way down the Mississippi, all the way down to the Gulf, and they're en route to escape to the Bahamas. So I'll hand you back to Don and Linda.
Wow, so you're living the dream. Tell me something. What is your favorite type of yacht to cruise, and why?
Well, we've got a catamaran, Island Spirit, and we enjoy a catamaran because it gives us plenty of room. It's very stable. We used to have a monohull that Linda didn't exactly enjoy the heeling over when we were sailing, and she much prefers the catamaran that you're on nice, firm, level ground. There's a lot of room for cooking. We've got three staterooms on here. We have guests with us all the time. It works out. It's almost just traveling in your home, basically. We have everything.
Nice. And in your experience, isn't it true that arriving in a foreign country on a yacht is much easier to do, to enter and stay in most countries than when you do so on an airliner, for example?
Well, we've got property in Canada, and we go over into Canada, and we find it very, very, very easy. We go in, and we at an obscure little immigration office they have there that we actually just call in a 1-800 number and talk to the customs officer, and he gives us a 7-digit number to post in the window, and we are on our way.
Wow, so you don't even have anybody come on the boat?
We see no one. We have no boat inspection. We have nothing. It's just you're in the office, talk to somebody on the phone, and you're gone on your way.
It sounds like they really want you to visit them. Is that the feeling you get?
Yes, they actually love to have you come over there. They're smart in that respect because you go to their country, you spend money there. On the other hand, coming back into the United States, it seems as though they kind of run you through the ringer. It's actually surprising carrying a U.S. passport. It seems like it's harder coming back into your home country.
Wow, it seems like everybody says that. Tell me something. What possessed you to first go sailing? And then tell us about some of the favorite countries you visited.
What first possessed us? We went and chartered a boat in the BVIs and had a great time on vacation. And we decided if we enjoyed it so much, we decided that we should try and do a sea school for a week to make sure this is the direction that we wanted to go. So we found Steve and Estelle, and they were phenomenal teachers and friends now after 16 years, and had a great experience. And then we started our plan, and we decided that we were going to get a catamaran, and to be able to afford it, we decided that we wanted to put it into charter service. And part
Wait,
of that...
Why did you want to do that?
To help pay for it. There is a large tax advantage, and of course the income also helps.
So, let's see, you had your boat in the Great Lakes for a while, and then down south in Florida?
Yes, we had it in Fort Lauderdale for a couple years, and we had it in the Great Lakes for 3 years, so a total of 5 years in charter.
What sort of money did you end up with net in your pocket in those years?
It varied depending on the season. There's not an exact amount. And then, again, there's a huge tax benefit, so you have to factor that in also.
Right. Well, one of the tax benefits I know about is the second home mortgage interest deduction that you get. So if you don't already have a second home, you can deduct that interest that you pay on your loan. And you all had to get a loan to get the boat, right?
Yeah, that's correct. We did take a loan out through a bank that actually I believe Stephen set up for us. But also a big advantage is for not necessarily as a second home, but as a business deduction, because the boat is in charter, it is a business, and again, it is a nice tax deduction.
Yeah, that's the active business deduction that you can take. And if you'd like more information on that, go to the website catamaranguru.com and you will find details about the active business deduction and other ways to make money or save money on taxes with your boat. Okay. What were some of your favorite places?
We seem to be drawn to islands and different places that are more along the lines of nature. We enjoy scuba diving, snorkeling, the jungle, different things like that. Belize is wonderful. A lot of the islands in the Caribbean. We're not so much the city folk, but we do enjoy the nature aspect of things.
Linda, what would you say to most women who have a fear about leaving their friends, family, and a comfortable home?
Well, first of all, your boat is your home, and you do not have to sell every single thing. You take so many, you can take, you know, your favorite pillows, you can take your favorite knickknacks. There's room on your boat for some things. I mean, again, it is your home. Also, you communicate with technology today. There's, of course, Skype, talking on the internet, seeing your friends. There's emails, texts, internet. You do get to communicate, and plus you meet some wonderful new people in the boating community.
Well, and you get to have a lot of friends come and stay with you in exotic places, right?
Nobody ever complains.
Okay. Tell me something. Everybody answers this question differently, and I love to just know, you know, how much does it cost to cruise?
Well, everybody has a different budget. We've seen, since we've been cruising, we've seen people cruise for as little probably as $700, $800 a month, and then we've seen people have budgets of, you know, $6,000, $7,000 a month. There's everything in between, and it's really what your comfort zone is and what you're willing to do or things you're willing to give up or not give up, which will abide by your budget.
Well, what would drive the cost up? I mean, how could you have? I mean, I've heard people say, I can't figure out how to spend more than $3,000 a month. So, like, what are some of the things that can drive the cost up?
I think the biggest cost that drives up is marinas. When you're do a daily dockage, that's quite a bit more expensive than if you get a week break on pricing or a month break on pricing. Also, of course, restaurants tend to add up quickly, and depending on how you provision also.
Uh-huh. By the way, there's a little trick that I've used, and it doesn't always work, but when you go into a marina, it helps to ask the dockmaster, can I have your annual rate? And even if you don't stay there for a full year, they'll oftentimes give you that annual rate, which is could be half the price of the daily rate. Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
What a great idea. I haven't tried it.
Learn something new every day.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, now, is it true that you can also catch fish and lobsters and things like that to sort of supplement your provisions?
Sure. We usually, if we're out cruising or whatever, and we're sailing, a sailboat's got a great speed that it travels at, and you can take a couple hand lines and run. And a catamaran, it's great because it's nice and wide. You can run a line off of each one of the scoops, and the lines won't get tangled up or anything. And all of a sudden, you'll look back, and there you'll have a fish flopping around in the water. You pull it in, and we've got great scoops that go right down to the water, and we sit back there and you flay the fish up right on the back scoop and just knock the guts off into the water, and it's free food.
Nice. Now, if you were going to do it again, what would you do differently? Would you get a different boat, go on a different route, or what do you think?
Well, we're kind of just getting started on the cruising. We just retired a couple years ago, and we've used the boat intermittently when it was being chartered out. But now that we're on the boat, like I say, we're just starting out. We've just completed the Great Loop, which is up the East Coast through the Great Lakes and down the Mississippi. And now we're going to take off to the Bahamas. And the cat's just been wonderful. It's a nice, stable home, and it's just been perfect for traveling.
Okay. Well, we're going to have to take a short break, and we'll be right back to talk about cruising and why yachts make the perfect escape vehicle. This is Gary Fretz, and you're listening to the Overseas Radio Network.